US President Joe Biden, in his first foreign policy speech, pledges to confront what he calls authoritarianism in China and Russia. Yemenis call for tangible results after the US President's promise to halt Washington's support for the Saudi-led war on its neighbor. Also ahead, Brazil registers more than 1,200 new coronavirus deaths for the third straight day, bringing its total confirmed fatalities to nearly 230,000. Welcome to World News. It's good to have you with us. Our top story this hour, the US President has outlined his foreign policy agenda. Joe Biden has promised to engage with Washington's allies and confront America's rivals. But he didn't cover all the major issues he is expected to clarify his position on.
In his first major foreign policy speech, U.S. President Joe Biden has laid out his administration's strategies. He opened his remarks by declaring that America is back. During his wide-ranging speech, Biden took sideswipes at his predecessor Donald Trump as he gave repeated assurances that Washington will strengthen diplomatic ties with its allies to confront what he called rising authoritarianism by the U.S. adversaries, including Russia and China.
We will not hesitate to raise the cost on Russia and defend our vital interests and our people. And we will be more effective in dealing with Russia when we work in coalition and coordination with other like-minded partners.
The president called for the immediate and unconditional release of Kremlin critic Alexei Navalny, who's sentenced to 3.5 years in prison for violating his terms of parole. Continuing with China, Biden referred to the Asian country as the U.S. most serious competitor. He vowed to take a tougher stance against the country, including taking moves to confront what he called Beijing's economic abuses. Elsewhere in his speech, the U.S. president called for an end to the Saudi-led war on Yemen, declaring a halt to Washington's support for the devastating six-year-long conflict.
This war has to end. And to underscore our commitment, we are ending all American support for offensive operations in the war in Yemen, including relevant arms sales.
He added that his administration will push for a diplomatic resolution in Yemen and will make sure that humanitarian aid reaches the Yemeni people. He, however, added that his administration will continue to support Riyadh and help the Arab Kingdom to defend itself. Biden later called on Myanmar's military junta that staged a coup and detained the country's civilian leaders over alleged election fraud this week to relinquish power, warning them of consequences. He further referred to measures he has already taken to reverse the previous administration's policies, including the re-engagement with the World Health Organization on the COVID-19 pandemic, the U.S. return to the 2016 Paris Climate Accord, lifting the so-called Muslim ban, increasing the cap on asylum seekers to 125,000, and halting U.S. troops withdrawal from Germany. Absent from his foreign policy speech, however, was mentioning of the U.S. stance of Iran and how Washington will proceed with regard to the 2015 Iran nuclear deal. He had previously pledged to return to the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, but several cabinet members later said there was a long way before the U.S. could return to the international accord, which Trump withdrew from. Biden, like his predecessor, seeks to overturn policies implemented during the previous administration. How far-reaching those changes are going to be, and how lasting and practical their effects would be, is anybody's guess at this point.
Now, political commentator Judith Bello says the new U.S. administration is following the same steps of the Trump team, but with a different face.
What they're really doing is they just want to put themselves in the driver's seat. They want to control actions around the world. And Biden has and his team have openly said this, that what they want to do is control the world and control world politics and world trade. And this is not going to work anymore. Countries like Iran and Venezuela, who have really led in their regions with regard to independence and regional cooperation, will not allow this to happen. China will surely not stand back from its Belt and Road, despite harassment by the United States, even to the extent of literally imprisoning the CIO of Huawei, just an incredible international crime with absolutely no explanation. Nobody talks about it. And it's just inexplicable to do that to another country, to a representative. So I think we are not going to see things go very smoothly.
The U.S. president's announcement that Washington will end its support for the Saudi-led war on Yemen has drawn immediate reactions from inside and outside the Arab country. An Ansarullah movement spokesman said the only way to restore peace in Yemen is to stop the Saudi-led war and end the blockade. The spokesman added that the option of war and siege against Yemen have failed in the face of the Yemeni people's heroic resistance. Moreover, a senior Ansarullah movement official noted that any action without tangible results to end war is futile. Anti-war activist Ken Stone says the new U.S. administration has realized the failure of the Saudi-led war on Yemen and is seeking to cut its losses.
I think that Biden has realized that the Saudi war on Yemen, like the Saudi war on Syria, has failed. And what might happen is that the Saudi regime, the monarchy, collapses. And that would be a disaster for the U.S. because it's one of the pillars of their domination of the Middle East. It's one of their main client states in the Middle East besides Israel. And so the U.S. Probably wants to cut its losses here and preserve its Saudi ally from collapsing. And also, the U.S. probably has bigger fish to fry. I think probably the biggest fish it wants to fry is China, against whom the U.S. government is lining up all its allies, including Canada, to try and contain the People's Republic. That's not a smart move, in my opinion, but I think that's what's on his agenda. You know, cutting away these losing wars, hopefully, and concentrating on what they regard as their biggest competitor. The Chinese do not want to be seen as a competitor or as a rival, but the Americans under Trump and under Biden see China as a rival and as a competitor, and I think that's where they want to focus their attention.
Now, Donald Trump's legal team has dismissed a request from Democrats for the former U.S. president to appear before Congress and give evidence for his impeachment trial. Trump's advisor Jason Miller said the ex-president will not testify in, quote, unconstitutional proceedings. The two Trump attorneys also called the request a public relations stunt. Democratic representatives acting as impeachment managers have asked Trump to testify under oath at his impeachment trial in the Senate next week. Trump faces the charge from House Democrats that he incited the deadly insurrection at the U.S. Capitol on January the 6th. Trump's lawyers have rejected the charge, contending that he executed his duties as president fully and faithfully. If convicted, the Senate could hold a second vote to disqualify the one-term president from seeking office again. Political commentator Edward Corrigan says it's difficult to prove former U.S. President Donald Trump deliberately incited the Capitol attack.
Well, if I was a lawyer advising Donald Trump, I would not want him to be before the Senate to give a presentation or to be asked questions. I think the risks are too large, and Donald Trump, quite frankly, is not capable of explaining himself. And if you followed his speeches over the years, quite often he reverses himself. He says one thing, he says the opposite, and there are some very skilled former litigators that would be in the Senate from the Democratic Party that would be questioning Mr. Trump. But the other thing is that they don't want to bring any more undue publicity to this or legitimate it in any way that will hurt Donald Trump or the Republican Party. The Democrats, I think, have to take some sort of stand because of what Trump did, because he clearly incited the crowd to go on a rampage and to attack the Capitol buildings in the United States. So it's a very fine line, but ultimately I think, you know, it's a hard thing to prove that he, you know, deliberately incited the crowd to attack the Capitol building, and which resulted in at least seven people dead and many more people being injured. Luckily, there was no members of Congress or the Senate that were injured. But you know, it clearly went right up to the edge. But how do you prove intent? And, you know, my view is that, you know, they want to damage Trump and hurt the Republican Party.
The U.S. House of Representatives has voted in favor of stripping a Republican lawmaker of two high-profile committee assignments. 11 Republicans joined Democrats in a 230-199 vote to approve the resolution, which removed Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene from the House Budget Committee and the House Education and Labor Committee. Greene has been under fire for her incendiary remarks, including support for violence against the Democrats. Greene expressed regret for remarks she made before entering office, but failed to apologize. She argues that what she is being accused of are words that she has made in the past and do not represent her now. The European Union's foreign policy chief says it's time to move from maximum pressure to maximum diplomacy with regards to Iran. Joseph Borrell added that the U.S. withdrawal from the 2015 Iran nuclear deal prevented the agreement from reaching its full potential. He noted that he's in contact with all the signatories to the accord to salvage it. The top EU diplomats welcomed the new U.S. administration's indication of a new approach on Iran, stressing that all participants are ready to engage. U.S. President Joe Biden has said he will return to the nuclear agreement, but only after Iran reverses moves to scale back its commitments. Tehran, however, says Washington must act first by removing all sanctions relabeled or reimposed under former U.S. President Donald Trump. Iran's permanent representative to the United Nations says the new U.S. administration is not off to a, quote, good fresh start in its approach towards Iran. Majid Takht-Ravanchi cited Washington's disappointment at a verdict by the International Court of Justice on a case concerning anti-Iran sanctions. The top UN court had ruled that it can take up Iran's bid to overturn U.S. sanctions reimposed by former President Donald Trump. Dr. Avanchi said the new U.S. administration's dismay at the judgment comes despite its claims of supporting multilateralism. He also pointed out that the U.S. is also still in violation of the U.N. Security Council Resolution 2231 by upholding illegal sanctions against Iran. The resolution enshrines a 2015 multilateral agreement which was meant to remove nuclear-related sanctions against Iran. French workers and trade unions have held nationwide demonstrations against the loss of jobs and more difficult working conditions due to the coronavirus crisis. Our correspondent Chris de Honde in Paris has more in this report.
Jobs and working conditions are much more in danger today than in normal times. That's why the main French trade unions called for a nationwide strike and demonstrations in order to defend jobs, salaries and working conditions. The COVID crisis is leading to an important loss of jobs and to an explosion of poverty. Trade union leaders call for a social spring.
The social spring is a formula we use to say that social question cannot be denied in this difficult period. So the anger we notice every day in the enterprises should find an expression. We want our demands to be heard.
These workers of the big French multinational Total are threatened with dismissal, despite financial support from the state. Other big companies in France, such as the pharmaceutical Sanofi, car constructors Renault and PSA, and Airbus, also benefit from important tax reductions and financial aid from the government. But that does not prevent them to fire workers.
Sanofi receives about 120 million euros every year for research. They pay less taxes and they are going to pay 4 billion euros to their shareholders. Today they announced a record of their profits. Meanwhile, they are firing workers and they did not find a vaccine. There is a problem.
France has not been able to produce its own vaccine, unlike the USA, Russia, China and even Cuba. A big disappointment for French people. Experts say it's due to the continuous privatization. Scientific research has been sacrificed for short-term profits.
We can't continue with the pharmaceutical industry that's making a huge amount of profits without investing their benefits in research for the general interest. Public research has to be maintained. The fact that Sanofi has not been able to produce a vaccine reveals a real problem in the system.
According to the National Institute for Economic Studies, INSEE, the French gross domestic product, GDP, went down with more than 8% in 2020, less than expected, but still a record since the Second World War. Unemployment increased with 8%. Nevertheless, the main French companies are making more profits today than before the COVID crisis. Profits for few, sacrifices for many. It's difficult to organize workers during lockdowns and curfews. Fundamental liberties are put in danger with the COVID crisis. A united front, as shown today in France, is one of the means to go forward. Chris Den Hunt, Paris.
Turning elsewhere now, Brazil registers over 1,200 new COVID-19 deaths for the third consecutive day. The fatalities raise the Latin American country's total death toll from the coronavirus to nearly 230,000. The Brazilian's health ministry also reported more than 56,000 daily cases, which bring the number of Brazilians infected with the virus to about 9.4 million people. Elsewhere in the Americas region, the U.S. remains the world's worst-hit country by the pandemic, with nearly 26.7 million infections and over 455,000 deaths. Pakistan's opposition parties have agreed to hold a mass long march towards the capital Islamabad to force the government of Prime Minister Imran Khan to resign over alleged rigged general elections. Javed Rana has more from Islamabad.
Senior leaders of combined opposition parties, including Pakistan People's Party and Muslim League of former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif, gathered in Islamabad to decide new course of action after opposition's deadline to Prime Minister Imran Khan to resign expired. After hours-long meeting, they announced that people from all over Pakistan would start a mass long march towards the capital Islamabad on March 26 this year to force the government of Prime Minister Imran Khan to step down and hold fresh general elections. The opposition blames the military to have rigged general elections in favor of Prime Minister Imran Khan in 2018.
We are struggling to get rid of an illegitimate government which was formed through rigging in general elections. We are trying to restore the sanctity of the public mandate.
A better sense must prevail among the opposition parties. The opposition must understand that their protests would not bring down our government. When we were in the opposition, we held protest rallies in Islamabad for 126 days to bring down the government.
The opposition launched a public mobilization campaign late last year across Pakistan to prepare people for the long march next month, something which government believes received a lackluster response. Prime Minister Imran Khan says that the opposition parties turned against him after he rejected their backdoor request to stop prosecuting top opposition leaders on corruption charges. The opposition's decision to start a mass long march has come after anti-graft watchdog started prosecuting top opposition leaders on money laundering charges. The former Prime Minister Nawaz Sharif has already been convicted on money laundering charges.
Analysts believe that the opposition parties enjoy little public support after their top leaders were tainted with the corruption charges. However, discontentment prevailed among people over unprecedented price hike after Pakistan devalued its currency under IMF pressure, something opposition failed to exploit in its favor. Javed Rana, Islamabad.
That wraps up our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
A diverse range of programs. Youth. Spirituality. Culture. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
The recent coup in Myanmar compounds the nationwide instability and stress that fuel the mental health crisis festering among Rohingya survivors and places real solutions further out of reach, says Andrew Riley, writer, in an article titled Rohingya Refugees Suffering Mental Distress. Stay tuned for the details, please. The tiger in my mind consumes me faster than the tiger in the forest, goes the common Rohingya saying. The shooting has stopped. The wounds have become scars. The burnt-out husks of old villages have been cleared away, and life in the refugee camps grinds on for more than 900,000 Rohingya in Bangladesh and more than 500,000 living under oppressive restrictions in Myanmar. But as the dust settles in the aftermath of atrocities, the Rohingya continue to grapple with the tiger in the mind, the unseen mental and emotional impacts of systematic human rights violations and violence. The recent coup in Myanmar compounds the nationwide instability and stress that fuel the mental health crisis festering among Rohingya survivors and places real solutions further out of reach. Continuing to address the symptoms without addressing the causes is not enough. A new study published by Fortify Rights documents severe, debilitating, and widespread mental health symptoms among Rohingya living in refugee camps in Bangladesh. Survivors recounted in detail their experiences reliving terrifying events through flashbacks and nightmares, feeling hopeless about the future, and unrelenting anxiety. The violence and torture that happened in Myanmar are usually in my thoughts and mind, a Rohingya man is quoted in the report saying. If I sit somewhere and remember the violence, I suddenly fall down and become faint. If I go to bed at night, the troubles that occurred in my journey to Bangladesh appear in my mind. Thus, I cannot sleep. The scale of distress is overwhelming. The Fortify Rights report describes serious symptoms of trauma, depression, and anxiety at astounding rates. 62% of Rohingya refugees in Bangladesh experience levels of trauma symptoms typically consistent with a diagnosis of post-traumatic stress disorder, while 84% experience symptoms indicative of severe emotional distress, and 89% experience symptom levels typically diagnostic of depression. To put these rates into perspective, the World Health Organization estimates that 1 year after an emergency, only 15 to 20% of adults will experience some type of moderate or mild mental health disorder. Why are Rohingya experiencing these extreme rates of trauma, depression, and anxiety? Fortify Rights identifies violence against the Rohingya in Myanmar, as well as restrictions on basic rights in both Myanmar and Bangladesh, as key contributors to mental health distress. A part of the military campaign against them in Myanmar, Rohingya survived extremely high rates of violence, including torture, stabbings, beatings, shootings, and sexual assault. But it's not only experiences of direct violence. that drive distress, many Rohingya in Myanmar have experienced a lifetime of extreme restrictions preventing access to healthcare, education, movement, work, marriage, childbirth, religious practice, citizenship, meeting in groups, or even identifying as Rohingya. These long-term restrictions, in addition to the genocidal attacks in 2016 and 2017, continue to erode Rohingya mental health long after escape from Myanmar. Sadly, the root causes of mental harm are not a thing of the past. The long-standing policies of persecution in Myanmar continue to be enforced, likely inflicting further mental harm on more than 600,000 Rohingya still living in Myanmar. In addition, needless and ongoing daily stressors in Bangladesh refugee camps contribute even further to mental health distress, including serious problems due to insufficient food, water, shelter, and living space, and restrictions on movement. Likewise, the current efforts by the government of Bangladesh to relocate Rohingya refugees forcibly to the isolated Besan Char Island could add to existing stressors and fuel additional mental harm. These environments of restriction and deprivation must be addressed. Refugee mental health crises of this scale are generally approached from a perspective of provision of public health and service. The United Nations and humanitarian aid organizations are seen as responsible for providing mental health and psychological services to facilitate healing and resilience among refugee populations experiencing high levels of distress. This approach is absolutely necessary and also absolutely insufficient to address fully the mental health distress among Rohingya. Providing mental health services without restoring basic human rights places a low ceiling on the healing that can be achieved and avoids confronting the complex political realities that fuel refugee distress. The restrictions levied against the Rohingya both in Myanmar and Bangladesh are not merely innocuous difficulties to be remedied in some distant future. They are a violation of fundamental human rights and a source of long-term and ongoing mental harm for Rohingya refugees. The international community must do more than write checks for humanitarian relief. Governments must use their bilateral political and economic leverage to pressure Myanmar effectively to re-establish democratic governance in the country. Furthermore, Myanmar must restore the rights of the Rohingya, including by granting citizenship and the right to freedom of movement. Bangladesh has also a role to play. Ultimately, the Rohingya want what we all want: human rights and freedom from the tiger in the mind.
Food for thought.
Salam, and here are some factors to contemplate upon regarding the all-glorious Creator, whom imagination cannot encompass. As described by Hazrat Fatima Zahra, peace upon her, the daughter of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. I bear witness that there is no God but Allah, who is one without partner. He who cannot be perceived with vision, neither be described with tongues, nor can imagination surround his estate.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This man changed the world.
Our bosses couldn't cope with the idea of an 80-year-old Ayatollah, which they didn't even know what an Ayatollah was, who lived on garlic and onions and yogurt, directing a revolution that was about to topple America's most important ally.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of Allah, the Exalted, the Most Compassionate, the Most Merciful. Salam, hello, and welcome to our audience, and particularly a warm welcome to our listeners of our program, The Man Who Changed the World. A program dedicated to the memory of a great leader and the father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini. May God bless his soul. We got to the point in this program where we've reached a stage where we've discussed the fact that Imam Khomeini, for those who don't have a belief in religion, will be an enigma. For those of us who do believe in Islam, he's not an enigma. He's the living essence and embodiment of the message of Islam. Dr. Hasni, very well, warm welcome to you on the program. Salam, and thanks
Thank
for
you,
being
sir,
with
for
us.
Having me.
Yeah, really, we've enjoyed your contributions in the previous programs as well. But Dr. Hasni, as you quite rightly point out, and as we have said over and over again, you said that Imam Khomeini, a great man like Imam Khomeini, is like a mountain. And you said we have to stand back and take the tapestry of the context in which this mountain is located and look at the features of this mountain as well, in terms of its height, in terms of its appearance, in terms of its color. We talked about the fact that Imam Khomeini is a mountain.
You know, the problem with us is this. Mm. We only care about all five senses, you know?
That's right, absolutely.
In order to understand something beyond that.
Beyond that.
You have to go and try very hard in order to understand.
Well, let's go beyond
the
that.
Significance.
Let's go beyond that. Let's do it. Let's make an attempt, even in our own humble way. As I say, we are not in any way going to fathom Imam Khomeini, because he was a man of God, a true man of God, the way of life of Islam as it should be lived by all of us. And as I say, I myself am personally sometimes ashamed that we are not the kind of Muslims we ought to be in terms of following the legacy of the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, let alone following an example like Imam Khomeini. May God bless his great soul. But let's put it in this context. Let's now look at something that, as you say, is beyond those five senses. Because there is something about Imam Khomeini which is beyond those five senses. We talked about that he was speaking from a time, because he speaks from the timelessness of the Quran. Because you told us there's no boundary here, isn't there? It's limitless. So if we want to touch this hikmah, if we want to touch this wisdom, I want to look at the fact that Imam Khomeini has said things which, under normal circumstances, and I mean in the context that Many scholars have not said anything different from what Imam Khomeini, rahmatullah alayh, may God bless his soul, has said at the end of his life in terms of the legacy of the Prophet being that I leave two weighty things, two valuable things, the Holy Quran and the infallibles, my family. Now, many scholars of the Ahlul Bayt, great scholars of the Ahlul Bayt, great philosophers from the school of Ahlul Bayt have mentioned this. But there are other schools as well, aren't there? There are other schools in the Muslim world as well, which also have their own reasoning, their own philosophy, their own understanding of the Quran. And they don't quite look at things the way we understand them from the school of Ahlul Bayt. And yet Imam Khomeini says the same thing, but the impact is entirely different. Other scholars have said before, but we've had many arguments about this, and there have been many controversial programs dedicated to this subject, that whether this is a sahih, whether this is mutawatir, is this something that really the Prophet was going to do, because he asked for a pen and paper in the last days of his life so that the ummah, the Muslim ummah, wouldn't go astray. Yet Imam Khomeini has done something which even I myself am puzzled by, that he has stated the same controversial statement, which, let it be known to the listeners, is not accepted by many parts of the Islamic Ummah. And yet, you know, we discuss this aspect of walayat.
It's not the status quo.
Yeah, it's not the status quo. And we discuss the fact about the importance of walayat, but many don't accept it. Mm-hmm. Yet Imam Khomeini does the same thing. And we see his posters with the Rushdie affair. You remember that, mm-hmm. in 89, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
The Rushdie affair, which was a complete attempt to blaspheme the Quran, to blaspheme the Prophet by the enemies of Islam. And yet we see the fact that Sunni brethren are holding up the posters of Imam Khomeini in light of the fact that he has said something very controversial, and for many schools of thought is very difficult to swallow even to this day. And yet we are now seeing the fruits of what Imam Khomeini is saying, may God bless his soul, through the Islamic awakening. Tell us, brother, how did that happen? How does this dynamic work in this context where other scholars, may I say this, unfortunately, couldn't get that across?
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Brother Ejaz, again, so many different subjects. First thing first.
Sure.
Talking about the legacy. The legacy it is, the legacy it was,
mm-hmm.
the legacy lives on.
And what it will be, what it will become.
My point is this, we always say Imam Khomeini, peace be upon him, this is his last name, referring to the piece of land, the geography that I was talking
sure.
to you about,
sure.
the last program. But I'm asking you this, what was his short name, first name?
Ruhullah.
There it? You go.
Yeah.
We always say Imam Khomeini, peace be upon him.
Yeah, yeah.
His first name was Ruhullah. What does it mean?
Spirit
of God.
God. And this is also a title of a great prophet in the Quran.
Exactly. You see?
Mm.
And a title for a new book to be written.
Yeah.
That's what we can talk about Imam Khomeini. Imam Khomeini lives within us, every single of us.
Yeah, he does.
The hope, the belief, the struggle, trying so hard to guide every single person on the planet. You mentioned the word Rushdie, supposed to mean guidance, and it wasn't. Just like Pharaoh claimed to take the children of Israel on the right path, to the right path, and show them the promised land, and he didn't.
No.
He couldn't deliver.
No.
He couldn't come through clean. And it happened to him what he was deserved to be happened to him. So, Spirit of God is the legacy, is the power. Mm-hmm. What is the Spirit of God? Think about it for a second.
This is something now beyond the senses, isn't it?
Exactly. because we are so entangled with material stuff, materialistic stuff.
We're blind.
You know the expression in the States, it doesn't matter what you do for someone. Mm. Let's talk about, for a second,
yeah,
you
sure.
know, for the sake of argument,
yeah, yeah,
okay?
Yeah.
Let's talk about in a relationship,
yeah.
a mutual one,
yeah.
okay? It doesn't matter, the male or female, doing for whoever,
right,
okay?
Right.
His partner.
Sure.
She always asks, I'm talking about the Western mentality here,
yeah.
but we all live there.
Yeah.
We know this.
Mm.
He said, by the way, what you have done for me lately? There is no satisfaction.
Mm. No satisfaction, right.
It doesn't matter what you do.
Mm.
Okay, you eat, you drink, you wear nice clothes.
Yeah, sure.
You drive nice car.
You're trying to live a good quality of life.
There's no end to it.
Mm.
There is no saturation.
Right.
You always hunger for something. You're always thirsty for something.
Sure.
The Spirit of God, you have to pause for a second. What does it really mean? Mm. Why we don't ask ourselves, instead of saying, what you have done for me lately,
mm.
what you have done for the reality, for the truth. Lately.
That's
or likely, like they call it.
Yeah.
What have you done for the truth, for the sake of truth? We always say, you know, this is it became kind of habit, and habit in the sense that you're not aware of it. This is not a good aspect.
Mm.
Okay. We always say, oh, for God's sake. We always swear by God whenever we need God in that sense, in order to fulfill some material needs of ours, we always refer to God. But who actually God is, what kind of attention we pay to this important matter? Why we don't ask ourselves, what have I done for the truth lately? Spirit of God helps us to understand that beyond this worldly,
sure.
materialistic aspect of life, there is something else to think about.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is that, you know, there are two, three elements that come into this.
You mentioned something about the school of thought.
Let me give you
another example.
Yeah, but what I'm seeing here is there's a combination of things in Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, which left others not able to say contrary to this, where they have been able to do it in the past. And this is what I find is unique here.
Brother, let me give you an example.
Mm. Because as you say, the Spirit of Allah is like
I'm trying to explain that.
Yeah, it's going back to the fact that of the Quran, as you said,
exactly.
these are those men who have made a pledge to Allah to give that correct pledge that they are going to do what the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, commanded them to do.
And it could be a broad way of understanding.
Mm.
Brother, this is a problem with material stuff, okay?
Yeah.
Think about a piece of rock, stone.
Okay.
Okay? Mm. Solid. This is the lowest level of being. Okay?
Sure.
And in the agricultural way of living, we use soil, which is a solid.
Sure. Sure.
The lowest level of being.
Yeah, mineral.
We use it mineral.
Yeah.
We use it to plant trees in it. Vegetables, in order to make produce, to be consumed by us. Okay,
sure.
This is one way.
Sure.
So solid for plantation.
Mm.
Then plantation is consumed by animals.
Animals.
Okay, cows eat grass.
Yeah,
they always done.
And always will.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. No matter what, no matter where.
Yeah.
No matter what century, because last time we were talking about 20th century, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's ironic to think about, when we're talking about 20th century, we think we are so modern. We are so sophisticated.
Yeah, yeah.
We're putting a class for someone else.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
We look at different people, different nations.
Mm.
You are inferior. Mm. We are superior to you. Why? Because we live in the 20th century. But it doesn't mean nothing, the way I'm trying to explain it.
That's a very good point.
Solid for plantation, plantation for animal.
Mm.
Animal for consumption by human.
Human.
Human for what? This is my question. This is a problem with the materialistic mentality of looking at things, okay?
From that point of view.
But you have to think about it.
Mm.
You have to think about it and come with a good answer for yourself first.
Mm.
You have to satisfy your curiosity and your need in order to understand, in order to gain the true knowledge. I'm talking about the true reality here. Mm. Because beyond these five senses, there are so many different things. We call it spirit. Spirit is not material. Mm. Okay?
Right.
Remember a few decades away in Germany, okay, this doctor, whoever, in researcher, okay, this guy was passing away. Mm-hmm. They thought that they would come up with a new idea in order to prove that there is a spirit or there is not. Mm. They put this ready to pass away.
That's right. Yes, they did
on
that.
On this scale, okay, on this sophisticated digital scale. Yeah. They're trying to weigh the soul.
Yeah.
Or the guy who went to the moon and said, look, what did you see on the moon? Said, I saw everything but God. I mean, that's a shame. That's very sad.
Yeah.
Okay? Mm. So, plantation for animal for human consumption. Mm. What is the role of human? What happens? He consumes. Then what happens? This is a question you have to think about.
Yeah.
Everybody has to answer to find a good answer.
So, in other words, we're going back to what we call in Islam, the fitra. We are going back to this primordial nature.
The insight. Yes.
And this is what I'm saying, that Imam Khomeini makes that same statement, that same hadith, and yet the rest of the schools of thought are silent. And not only silent, they're picking up his picture, and they're also bearing witness to the fact that this is a man who is the spirit of Allah of our time.
Exactly.
And beyond.
He was Ruhullah before he was Khomeini. Anybody mention his name back days, you know, during the 15 of Khordad, you're talking about 50 years ago.
Mm.
They call him Sayyid Ruhullah. And Sayyid in Arabic is someone who takes care of the rest of them.
Takes care of the rest of them, right.
He's a master. He's a generous. He's a noble. Is a noble one. We don't pay attention, brother. This is a problem again.
Mm.
We don't pay attention to these words.
Yes,
we think this is only a name.
Yeah.
But name should have someone, you know, to be felt with.
But it has characteristics. It has a personality in itself.
It sure does. He was Ruhullah. Because he was Ruhullah, then if you are attached to God in that sense that I tried to explain.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay?
Mm.
If you are Ruhullah, number one, you are not scared of nothing.
Exactly.
It doesn't matter how many enemies in front of you.
Mm.
You know, one of the titles for the commander of the faithful. He was Karar. Why? Because he was Ruhullah at the same time.
Precisely.
He was Valiullah. Vali what? He was connected with God.
Mm-hmm.
And God is not material. So it tells us that we shouldn't be trapped in the sense that anything we cannot see with the physical eye, anything we cannot hear with this earthly ear, okay, wahi, revelation, is some kind of hearing. But not everybody is
able to hear it. Yeah.
So if you cannot hear, if you cannot see it, if you cannot touch, if you cannot feel, if you cannot taste, therefore, it doesn't exist. That's not the case. How come that school of, you mentioned something very nice, the school of thought.
Mm.
The school of thought goes wrong when you put an end, put a ceiling to an understanding.
Well, that's very interesting. Isn't it?
If you limit yourself to something, therefore you cannot go beyond, you cannot fly.
Fly.
And the sky is the limit, because God is a limitless being, if you will.
And he has to open a limit.
And I'm trying to speak so simple.
Yeah,
yes.
But you're talking about a gate or a door that has to open to this limitless
exactly.
world.
Exactly. That's why Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon
him, says
Ana Madinatulam. I am the city of knowledge.
Beautiful.
And Aliyum Baba.
Baba.
Ali is the gate. And anywhere you want to, anytime, brother, it doesn't matter where.
Hmm.
This is the manner of doing. Anytime you want to enter a building, a house, how are you going to do it? You're going to jump from the back wall. You're not going to do that. You're going to enter from the gate. But the gate should be the correct one.
Yes.
Okay? This school of thought stops itself from solid. It comes to plantation, which is fine, which is true.
True.
Okay? to the animal level of being, which is true, and the relationship between each, which is true, and from animalistic level, you come to human. But you stop there. This is where you go wrong. This is where you go astray. That's why you see suicide. In Islam, suicide is forbidden. You know why? There's a reason behind it. Anything God tells you, there is a reason behind it. The point is, you might understand, you should understand. Or, if you don't understand, you go look for the truth.
There are
people who understand.
Yeah, search for the wisdom.
Okay? And there might be a case that God is testing you, for example.
Sure.
But at least you understand that God is going to test you. There is no reason. There is wants to put your worshipness, if you will, your being a slave to God, your abd, okay, to God, by testing you. But there is a reason for it. In Islam, suicide is forbidden. Why? Because you don't belong to yourself. This body is not yours.
So, in other words,
it's only a deposit.
In other words, what you're saying is Imam Khomeini, may God bless his great soul, through the Bab, through this gate of knowledge.
Even through the right ball.
The right door.
You mentioned something about source.
To the source.
I should add.
Source of the knowledge.
Yeah. Source is not enough, brother. Source, the singular.
Yeah, but what I wanted to.
Sources is not enough. Pure source.
Pure source, yes. The pure source, which is the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, himself.
And he's the pure source.
The pure source. But the point I'm making here is, that he said this statement, this hadith of the Quran, to raise the bar for the other schools.
And he did indeed. Imam Khomeini.
That's why they couldn't argue with this point. Because as you see.
You know how you judge a person, a personality? You know how you value someone? When he or she knows his value or her value.
Excellent.
You are not yourself. You don't belong to yourself. That's why you cannot.
Yes.
You cannot cease your life.
Yeah.
You cannot commit suicide. This is one of the unforgivable sins of all. You can't kill yourself. You don't belong to yourself. This pain is not mine. It doesn't belong to me. Can I own it?
No, you can't.
Can I own it, then destroy it? I can't.
No.
This is only someone gave it to me, okay, for a higher purpose.
A trust.
Very good. A trust. This is our soul, back to Ruhullah. Mm-hmm. Our soul belongs to him. This is a divine source, divine spirit. Ruhullah in that sense.
Yes. And Ruhullah in the sense of this great personality, has pledged the purity of this soul as a trust to fulfill that.
To the only pure source.
Source.
To begin with.
Yeah.
To begin with.
To begin with.
And to end up with, of course, because we are all holding responsible in front of him, in the eye of Allah. Mm-hmm. He's the final judge. Do you see that? It changes the whole story.
That has been the key success in terms of bringing the Muslim Ummah together to understand this importance of this concept of Walaya.
And if somebody follows this path, of course he's going to capture the hearts. Why? Because the hearts does not belong to you or me.
Yeah, because we mentioned that he's from the masses.
Brother Ejaz, again, hearts, minds, you might manipulate it.
Yeah.
Okay, brainwash.
Yeah.
We have that.
Sure.
But hearts does not belong to me or you, or any government for that matter.
Exactly. He owns them.
He's the Muqallib al-Qulub. Remember the prayer that
Please quote from the Quran if you can,
Muqallib al-Qulub.
Yeah, as an example.
Him.
Yeah.
And qalb is something that it constantly moves.
It's dynamic.
It's struggle.
Yeah.
It's dynamic.
Yeah, it's within the self-struggle.
In a medical term, I don't know, I'm asking. All right? We all hear about the different kind of cancers. Okay?
Yes, yeah.
All different kind of cancers.
Sure.
So far, I haven't heard about cancer of heart.
No, I've not heard about
this. I don't know. No. I might be wrong.
Yeah, I haven't heard about it. No.
But if that's the case, if that
they
would be
They call it
the
heart
case,
disease, for example.
Heart disease, but not heart attack.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what
heart attack. I would say
cardiac arrest.
It's something that you should think about at least. Because when you lodge it with someone, okay, you can't push it. You cannot go further.
Yeah.
But the thing is, okay, if someone gets to know somebody, gets to like or to love somebody, which we're supposed to do with God.
Yeah.
We have to get to know him.
Know him.
Okay?
Yes.
Then we have to love him.
Yes.
And the love comes from knowledge.
Exactly.
That's why, you know, all this, you know, earthly love is not true love. Okay?
No, it's not.
Why? Because there is so many different kind of reasons for divorces.
Yeah.
If you, you know, if you say you love someone, how come you beat them up? It, you know, the situation of love and hate.
Yeah.
You can love something, somebody, and hate it at the same time.
Yeah.
Am I wrong or what?
Sure.
I'm just raising this point in order to think.
Yeah.
Because the subject of this program is to understand.
Yes. But God's love is not...
We are going to try to understand.
Yeah, but God's love is not in that context.
In that context. Yes. Okay? So... Number one, you have to understand. Number two, you have to love in order to prove your love. Then, what have you done for me lately? God can ask us this.
Yes.
On a daily basis.
Yes. And God, he has the right.
Again, and he has the right because he created us.
Sure.
For what? He didn't need us. Did he?
No, he didn't.
He didn't.
No.
Why? He gave us favor. He did us a great, unimaginable, unexplainable,
favor.
Boundless favor. So if someone give you a car, for example, you know, car, whatever the price might be, well, how many times you're going to say, look, I really truly appreciate you?
Yeah. How many times are you
going to say, if someone gives you, you know, a camera, okay, how many times are you going to say, hey guy, you're so nice?
Yeah,
to
you
me.
Got
thank
it on
you.
Eid, for example.
But God gave us two eyes.
Yeah.
You know, what kind of camera is this?
Yeah.
It works for 80 years
without
repair in some cases if you don't ruin it, if you take care of it.
Yeah.
Okay? But do we tell God every day, God, thank you for eyes. Thank you for giving me ears. We don't. What does it say in the Quran? This is the difference.
What does it say in the Quran that man is mostly ungrateful?
Brother, to make the long story short, and we can go on in the next program.
Yeah.
Okay? The difference between Ruhullah, between Imam Khomeini and me, I'm talking about myself here now.
Sure.
Okay, is that he thinks about this stuff and he believes in it and he loves this stuff and he acts upon it. Period.
And that's why.
And that makes the beauty.
Nobody could argue with him.
Nobody can argue. Nobody can touch it because he's talking about the truth.
Exactly.
You might hide the truth one day, one moment, but you cannot fool everybody all the time.
And I love the fact that, you know, you say this and I love the way it came. This is another thing. It's not something that Imam Khomeini
the
is...
The way it was to come.
The way it was to come. Thank you for that. Thank you. I mean, there's an order to this. There's a logic you can follow with this as well. That certain events happen over that 10-year period as the Imam was living. He puts it into a context where people are beginning to see the unimaginable. Beginning to taste the unimaginable, the impossible, as you said right at the beginning, the impossible is becoming a reality in the late 20th century. And as we get to the end, he puts it this context of this hadith after we see the fall of communism. He's already sowing the seeds to show that this is the path we've got to go on after you see the collapse of this. We'll discuss it in the next session. But thanks,
God willing, we do.
Thanks, Dr. Hassani, for the valuable contribution on this program. It's been really excellent and remarkable. Thanks a lot, because when we talk about this personality, really, we open up some really remarkable doors. And it leaves me to say, wa assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and blessings and mercy of Allah be upon you all. And thanks for listening.